Welcome to the Coworkers Podcast with Jesse and Shaney,
where every believer is a coworker in God's mission. Welcome back, dear friends. Today, I'm so excited about the episode we have to share with you. We have a special guest, dear friend and coworker and sister, Kirti. Welcome to the show, Kirti. So glad to have you.
Thank you for having me.
So, Kirti, the reason I've asked her to come and share with you all is because, well, first of all, Kirti is a friend, and every time I talk to her, I feel encouraged and spurred on, both in my relationship with the Lord and in our gospel work in South Asia. But specifically, Kirti grew up in a Hindu family in the U.S., and the Lord saved her when she was 24 years old and has such a beautiful, powerful testimony that I'm excited for her to share. And she and her husband and her three kids have been serving in South Asia the last 6 years. My desire is to give Kirti the mic and let her share, first of all, how God saved her and for us to rejoice at how God completely transformed her as a young woman. But also specifically, Kirti, I want you to teach us Westerners how we can understand and love our Hindu friends better so that they can also come to know the Lord Jesus. So that is our desire. And let me tell you from the start, thank you for your willingness. I don't think it's a small thing. I mean, you're sharing your story, and I'm sure there are vulnerable parts to this. I want to honor it. I want to honor you, and I want to honor your family. And so just thank you truly for your willingness to come and share this with many, many listeners.
You're welcome. And I do hope it's encouraging. It is my story. It is not, I know there's so many differences, and I've learned so much as we've lived over here in South Asia that my story is a very isolated and small version of many different stories in this area of the world. And so I look forward to sharing with you guys what I've gone through in my past and how the Lord brought me to where we are today, and hopefully can give you some insight on what I've learned as I've lived over here as well.
So would you just start by sharing a bit about your background and how you came to faith in the Lord Jesus?
Yes. So I was born in America, and I was raised and born and raised in a Hindu family. We had a big extended family. We all lived in the same city. Being members of the Hindu temple there was a big deal for my family. I grew up going to an Indian youth group where every weekend we were taught the Bhagavad Gita. My cousins and friends and I acted out plays for every festival and holiday, all the Ramayana stories, all the ones in the Mahabharata. So I grew up learning a lot. And again, that's not every person's experience in America, but that was mine. And so because my family's Gujarati, I never missed a night of Navratri, loved dressing up, loved dancing. My mom always had my sister and I fasting and doing pujas and jagran, which is like staying up all night and breaking your fast in the morning. So that was my upbringing at home. Loved my family. It was a big family. I love the culture I grew up in. And I often shared it with my friends that I went to school with, would bring them to festivals, bring them to things that we were doing because I had pride in it, and I thought it was a lot of fun, and I thought my friends would enjoy it. So I by no means grew up feeling unsatisfied or disgruntled in any way. But it was when I went off to college where I realized maybe what I thought was important to me wasn't, because it was very easy for me to just drop all of that when I left home and went to school. Went away to college because I didn't have my family taking me to the temple every weekend. I didn't have anyone, you know, encouraging me to go to the temple where I was at in college or do any of those things. And like most Indian Americans that grow up, when you go away from home, you enjoy life and you're working on school. And so that's basically what I did during my undergraduate years. I thought that if my job as a student was to make my parents proud, do well in school, find a career, graduate, work, get married, have kids or something like that, and everything would be fine. And it wasn't until I got to graduate school where it was when we were going through our doctorate program, I had a roommate that moved in with me. And at the time, we were in school 7 days a week. We were either in lecture Thursday through Sunday, or we were treating patients. And because we had to be in lectures all day on Sunday, a lot of the students that went to church on Sundays couldn't go. And so they started an on-campus Bible study. And it was a small postgraduate program. So there weren't a lot of us. So we all kind of knew what everybody was doing for the years that we were in the master's program together and then moving forward in our doctorate program. And so as we're going through this program, my roommate happened to be one of the Bible study leaders. I did not know that that's what they were, what she was doing and meeting with other people with and organizing. But I knew something was going on. And one day I decided to ask her and I said, you know, hey, Beth, what are you guys doing? What's with the guitars and all of this stuff? And I had a lot of other things going on in my life at the time. And so I wasn't really paying attention to what they were doing. And so the curiosity just got to me and I asked her one day and she said, well, we do Bible study on campus because we can't go to church on Sundays because of lecture. And I said, okay. And she goes, you're welcome to come anytime if you'd like. And so I walked away from that conversation thinking, that's interesting. Like at that point, it had been 6 years. I was in my seventh year of not living at home. Never did I once think somebody my age would do something like that without being forced to by their family. And it was interesting to me. I'm like, okay, these are my peers and they think that this is important enough to do on their own. They're motivated to do on their own. And that intrigued me. And so one day I did decide to go to Bible study. And I said, I'm just going to sit here in the back. They would do it in one of our labs. And I was sitting there in the back and I had walked in and they were singing. And mind you, at this point, I was raised in the South in the U.S., never been invited to church. I've never been into a church service. And so I'm looking at these sheets of paper that have this music, songs I'd never heard of, words I probably didn't really understand. And I'm just crying and I have no idea why. And it was really moving. I don't even remember the names of the songs. But then the person leading the Bible study started talking about Matthew 11, verse 28 through 30. And it's where Jesus is talking about, come to me, all who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest because my yoke is easy and my burden is light. And I sat there the whole time thinking, I have no idea what this is about or what they're talking about or what they're studying or who Jesus even is. And so after we were done, I went up to the front and talked to my classmates and I said, what is this? Like, can you explain to me? And so that led to a lot of conversations of, well, this is what I grew up learning. And the more they would tell me about Jesus, I said, well, have you heard about Krishna? Because the stories are very similar. And for me, in my mind, I thought, okay, well, these are similar stories. This is just the Christian version, right? And then the one I learned is the Hindu version, but it's kind of basically the same when you look at their births, how they were, you know, some of the stories, just the parallels in the stories themselves. And as well as the later, as I was learning and kind of comparing Hinduism to Christianity about even the second coming of Christ and what the next avatar of Vishnu is supposed to be on this white horse. And I'm like, this is really weird, but it intrigued me. And I was like, I just have a lot of questions. And so I had questions. And within a 3 month period, when we could go to church, like there are some Sundays where we didn't have lecture. And so I would go to church with some of my classmates. And church in America unfortunately, is not for somebody that doesn't have a background in Christianity, because I would go to church and the pastors would use words that I'm like, I'm not a dumb person, I don't think, but I don't understand some of these words that he's using. I don't understand the stories. And it's almost like they're talking as if I should, but I don't. And so after church on those days, I would sit with my classmates and I would have like 100 questions. Okay, use this word. What does this mean? He was talking about this story and it sounded like I should know what he was talking about, but I had no idea what he was talking about. And so we would meet and we would talk about those things. And I ended up reading through one of the Gospels and just had a lot of, in my mind, the thought process was, if I get all of my questions answered, because I had questions like, okay, this is what my family has believed for generations. There's billions of people that believe this. And you're telling me that there's a God that is going to send them all to hell because they don't believe this. I'm like, you're saying I'm going to go to hell, but nobody's even told me about this. Like, how can I be held accountable for that? I mean, I just had a lot of questions like that. And so we just started talking. And again, I kept asking, I was seeking for the truth. Cause I was like, if I can get my questions answered and I can figure out what is true, then I can make a decision. And I think where I was struggling was in my upbringing and teaching of the Bhagavad Gita in our youth like program at our temple, they always taught that Hinduism was a way of life, that anybody can be a part of it, that anyone can enjoy it. If they, you know, if you have good karma, you know, God's going to bless you, right? And that's not people specific. Anybody can do it. And it seemed like a very all-inclusive faith. Mm-hmm. I liked that at the time.
Yeah.
And then what my classmates were telling me was this is the only way. And I was struggling with that. I'm like, how can this be the only way? And so that was where a lot of my questions stemmed from. And so it was within 3 months of just going to church and wrestling with these questions, reading the Bible, reading some books on apologetics where one day, and at the time I didn't know, but now being a little more aware and knowledgeable, the Holy Spirit came on to me and called me by name and said these exact words, said, you know, this is true. It's time for you to make a decision. And in that moment, I knew whether my questions were answered or not, I knew it was the truth because that's what I was searching for. And so in that moment was when I gave my life to Christ and I decided to follow Jesus. I was 24 years old, was almost finishing with graduate school, and I hadn't told my family. They didn't know what was happening. So a lot was going on very soon after that. And so it was a very freeing time in my life where in that moment, I understood the truth of who God was, the truth about my own sin, which I hadn't really even thought very much about up until that point. And just the truth about my destiny, right? Because in my mind, it was very material. I never thought about eternity. If I did, it had more to do with karma. And okay, I'll get another chance in my next life if I mess this one up. And so understanding those truths were extremely freeing in the moment. And so that's how I gave my life to the Lord. And it was 20 years ago last month that happened.
Wow. That is amazing. I got goosebumps all over again when you shared the Holy Spirit speaking to you so clearly. And there's so many parts about it that I want to dig into. First of all, I think it's interesting that, you know, you mentioned you are proud of your culture and you weren't necessarily dissatisfied, right? You weren't like walking around like, oh, I have a hole in my heart. But you did realize the contrast of people doing this out of their own desire and as opposed to doing it because of your parents' pressure, the tradition, you know, the kind of the family culture. I found that really interesting that you needed someone to tell you about it. You didn't already know that you needed some more truth. I thought it was so sad, very sad and disappointing to hear that you were in your 20s, you grew up in America in public schools and never were invited to church by anyone.
The home I grew up in the South, every entrance to my neighborhood had a church. And yeah, it is. It is amazing to me that I did not hear the story until I was 24 years old. You know, and I think about like how many of my friends who I know now through as I got older and through social media that, again, relatively speaking, I don't know if they're true followers, but they go to church. They attended church and they came with me to my temple. They saw what we did. I invited them in. And I don't think there would ever have been a moment where my parents or I would have said no if somebody would have said, hey, would you like to come to youth group with us? Or would you like to come to church with us one day? Mm-hmm. There would never have been a reason to say no, mm-hmm. but I just was never asked.
Wow. You were curious as you were learning more about kind of some of the overlap between Christianity, the Bible's teaching, and Hinduism. But you said when you went to church, it was very confusing. So mm-hmm. What kept you going to church?
Honestly, I wouldn't say it was the church that kept me going. It was the believers that God put into my life that took the time to explain things to me. That was key for me because I had a million questions. And had I just walked into a random church and sat and say, I even went back once, twice, maybe even three times without having anyone to hold my hand and say, let me explain this to you. Or do you even understand what they're talking about today? Or, hey, can we sit and talk about what you learned today during the teaching or whatever? I may not be here. I don't know.
Yeah.
Had people, the Lord put people like that in my life that were willing to answer all my dumb questions about things that I think oftentimes now looking back as a Westerner, as someone who knows Christ now, I think oftentimes we make a lot of assumptions. And I think when we come across people that have never heard, we have to get rid of those assumptions and we have to start very basic about explaining who Christ was and what this whole meta narrative of the Bible is about, because there is no reference point often for people. And so, and that was me. That was me. I had no idea.
Well, I think we just forget, you know, we grow up in church and we assume that anyone will just feel comfortable walking in, sitting in a pew. I mean, the way that I can relate is the few times that I've been to different like Hindu ceremonies here in South Asia, I have no clue what's going on. I feel like such an outsider. I feel so out of my comfort zone. And I just try to be quiet and kind of stay in a corner and hope that nobody expects anything out of me, you know, and kind of want to leave as soon as possible.
My first experiences of going into church almost felt like I entered some secret club. And I said, they use words that I don't understand. And they're talking about things that I feel like I'm supposed to know what they're talking about, but I really don't. And I don't really feel like I belong here.
When you start facing the reality of the message, how exclusive it is. When we were in college, we were doing ministry to South Asian students. And many of them would come with us like on our spring break mission trips because they didn't have anywhere else to go. So I had a good South Asian friend that came with me. She was my roommate, very, very dear friend that I love. And, you know, every evening we did worship and had teaching. And she came up to me at the end and was like, "You're saying that every person I know in my home country is going to hell? Is that what you're saying?" Like deep in my gut, I was just like, oh, this is so painful. Oh, but I shared the gospel with her again and was just like, this is your chance to change that. You can change that for your children, for your family. It can be, you know, the truth now. It can be changed. Okay. You shared about how the Holy Spirit really spoke to you and you basically came to a point of decision. Tell us what happened after that and share a bit about how your family responded, kind of some of the things that you went through.
So when I made the decision and eventually told my parents, there were two things that were just really heartbreaking for me. One was sitting at our dining room table and my parents just in tears saying, "Did we raise you wrong?" And so I still get emotional about it because I love my family. And I know my parents sacrificed a lot to leave South Asia and for us to be raised in the States. And that was never my intention. It wasn't what I wanted them to feel. Mm-hmm. And so I had to tell them, I was like, "No, I love you. You gave me a great life. This is not, this decision has nothing to do with how much I love you or what I think that you did right or wrong. I know I have great respect for my dad and all the sacrifices he made. And I needed to make sure he knew that." The other heartbreaking part of it was the shame that my parents felt because of my decision. Now my family, my aunts and uncles and my cousins, would never say anything to my face, but they did say things to my parents, like, because I was one of the older daughters, again, we were an extended family. So my cousins were like sisters and my male cousins were like brothers. They would say to my parents, "You let your daughter do this, but we are not going to let our daughters do something like this. And when they said that, they meant about converting as well as marrying someone that was not Indian, as well as not having a Hindu wedding ceremony. I mean, there was a lot tied into their disappointment and their verbalizing how ashamed they were of my parents for letting me make this decision. And so that was hard. That was hard. It's still hard when I think about it. When we had that conversation, I knew that it was going to be up to me to prove them wrong. Because I think one of the other fears that they had in saying those things was that I wasn't going to be a part of the family anymore, that I didn't want to be a part of their family, that I wanted to move on and do something different. And so I knew, and even after I was married, my husband and I, we both knew that the onus is on us to make sure my family knows that we love them, that we are still a part of the family, and that we're going to be there for our family functions, because that was a big deal and it was important to my family. What we knew we were going to do is be there for everything, but also set boundaries of what we weren't going to do because of our faith and because of my faith, because there's a lot of expectation on me, not necessarily my husband, but on me being the oldest daughter. As my younger sister and my cousins were getting married and their baby showers, there's a lot of responsibilities being the oldest sister that I would have from a religious perspective of doing ceremonies. And I had to be very clear that those were things we were not going to do, but our presence was always going to be there to show that we still love them. Mm-hmm. And it took a lot of time. I mean, I would say almost 10 years before my family started showing signs of, okay, like we haven't lost Kirti. She's still here and she's still a part of us. She believes something different, but she is still our family. And so that was a process that took a very, very long time, a very long time. But it was something, like I said, it's still something I get emotional about. But over the years, in continuing to be present with my family, while keeping the appropriate boundaries where needed, over the years, I have seen my family come around to where my aunts and uncles trust my younger cousins to come to me and my husband for advice. My parents, if they're watching our children and we're away on the weekend, they know that they take my children to church. My parents know all of our church friends. While they got to see our church family rally around us when we left. And my church friends pick my parents up from the airport. They drop them off. They help them out. They get up during COVID. They've taken care of them. And so our church family has shown my family love as well. And so my mom still knows. She can call and she texts my friends when it's Christmas or it's Easter. And they've been to church at Easter time with my children. And so I have seen my immediate family come around in that sense, but even my extended family, the uncles that would shame my parents to where now as their children have grown up, have been like, yeah, why don't you ask Kirti for advice on this, whether it's career or marriage or things like that. But compared to what I have seen people have to struggle through in South Asia, it's different, right? Mm-hmm. So I was raised where I was, when I came to faith, I was going to have the ability to have my own job, have my own roof over my head, be completely independent. Had my family chosen to completely cut me off, I was going to be okay. Mm-hmm. I lived in a society and was raised in a society where independence is all right. I even had a classmate who also South Asian, who's she and I both kind of came to faith around the same time. And she was going through medical school at the time. And when she came to faith, her family did legitimately cut her off. Mm. She ended up having to take out student loans. And to this day, her family has not seen her four children. But we both had the ability to weather that, right? That's a different story when you're looking at some of our young ladies in South Asia, even some of our young men, because our young people here, they're considered youth and young until they're married. And sometimes that's, you know, at the age that I became a believer, right? They still consider them a youth. And yeah. In America, we're considered adults. Yeah. And so financially, they're dependent. They're dependent socially on everything that they're doing. And when those things get stripped away, that's a lot of cost to count for them. Right. And so I think those are things we can be sensitive towards. Yeah. When I share my testimony with people here, I make sure that they understand that I didn't have to count the cost the way they did. Now, there was struggles and there were costs I had to count, but it's different. And I understand that. And I asked them about it. I asked them, like, okay, if you were to do this, like, what would your family do? How would you survive? Like, I understand this is not an easy decision to make. And so I think those are things that give us more compassion as we share with other people. Yeah. It gives me a heart to want to know their struggles even more.
Well, that's what you've shared with me in the past, and it has certainly stirred up compassion in my heart for our friends here. We've seen many, many of our Hindu friends come to faith over the years, and we've seen many of them face a lot of rejection, a lot of them be afraid of what their families would say, many be kicked out, at least for some time. Many things of what you shared, I think, would still be so hard. Every daughter wants to bring her parents honor. Every daughter wants her parents to be proud of them. So the thought of bringing your parents shame is not a small thing. That's so hard. And so for you and for our friends here, what a big, big thing. And so it encourages me to not ever be flippant about that, to honor the pull in their hearts. It's not a small step because of that love for their family. And I think even that desire for their family to be saved. So it certainly stirs up compassion in my heart and the responsibilities, the family responsibilities, the expectations, depending on, you know, whether you're a son or a daughter and your birth order. And that's such a big thing in South Asia also.
It was a big issue with my family. I was the first girl to be born in my dad's family in 7 generations. And so everything I did my entire life, I can still hear my uncle's voices. This is our Kirti. She is our first to finish high school. Wow. She is our first to do these things. And so even when I was going to get married, again, there's a story behind that, before I came to faith, they were so excited that this is the first wedding, Hindu wedding, right, that our family is going to get to throw. And again, that all got canceled. It's part of my testimony. We didn't go into it today, but it wasn't just a disappointment to my parents. It was a disappointment to my whole family. And because they always kind of held me up on this pedestal for all the other kids to come and follow. And now this, our oldest is not doing what we have taught her to do. So, it was hard. It was hard. And again, obviously I'm emotional about it, and it's still there.
Of course. Yeah. But your commitment to love your family and not give up on them and not even let your heart get so hurt by their rejection that you harden your heart towards them is beautiful. And that is the love of Christ. That's brings so much glory to the Lord. I would love it, Kirti, if you could share whether we're living in America or some part in the West, or whether there are people like me who live in South Asia. I'm surrounded by majority Hindu people all around me. How can we reach out and show the love of Christ and share the gospel in a way that will be understood and received?
Well, the context I came from was one where we grew up. We were vegetarian. All of the worshiping and puja and religious activities we did involved, you know, when you think about offerings and things like that, involved fruit and flowers and nuts and sweets. When someone first told me about Christ and about his sacrifice and how blood needed to be shed, that was very confusing. I didn't understand. And like I was saying before, as there are a lot of assumptions we make as believers in the West of, well, how do you not understand that, right? Like you have to have a blood sacrifice in order to have atonement for your sin. to someone who's raised as a Hindu, that's not an easy leap, right? Especially if you were raised that way, where there was nothing ever that was killed during a religious ceremony that you experienced, right? And again, like I said, I know that's not everybody's experience, and there are Hindus that practice other ways. But for me, it didn't make sense, and I needed explanation. I couldn't understand why. And so as we have lived here and as we have shared with people, I think one of the things I have learned is it is so important to start from creation, right? So I love explaining creation to Christ and explaining why that type of sacrifice was needed. You know, memorizing, you know, doing things like memorizing verses and all those things are great. And those can reach people and they can stir people's heart the way they stirred mine. I knew nothing, but that verse has always stuck in my heart because it's the first one I ever heard. But there needs to be some explanation, I think. And so often when you are sharing with people, I think asking questions, I think maybe sometimes we think, well, if I just say these things, God's going to call them. And maybe they have questions, but if we don't ask, we don't know, right? If I didn't ask all the questions I had in my heart because I was clueless, I don't know how long it would have taken me to come and receive Christ and to know the Lord. And so I am very much relational when I talk to people. I want to know where they're confused about what I'm saying. I want to know what they think. I speak, but I ask a lot of questions because I want to know, are they understanding? I want to know what they know before I even say anything about Jesus, right? Mm-hmm. And what they think and what type of Hinduism do they practice? Mm-hmm. Or do they practice it at all? Or is it like me? Do they do it just because it's their family, right? And not because they actually believe it. You know, where are they coming from? So that I can say, okay, well, can I tell you my story? And I think sometimes we jump the gun on that and we just want to get out what it is that we want them to know. But I think it stirs compassion in our heart if we understand where they're coming from. You know, it is often, and right now it is a time where with the pandemic and things happening in the world and what has happened, especially in South Asia, there isn't a South Asian in this world that was not affected by what happened last summer. Mm-hmm. And so getting to heart questions in a hurry right now is an easy time. How did you handle the pandemic? You know, was your family affected? Let's get rid of all the fluff questions and let's go straight to, you know, are you struggling? What are you struggling with? Are you struggling with fear? You know, and talking about those things. Well, can I tell you how I'd have dealt with that? Mm-hmm. And I have found that that has opened up conversation that has led to the gospel in a hurry. And so I think right now is a great time to be able to ask those types of questions because it's something everybody can relate to on an emotional level. People have had to think about their mortality no matter what. And so those are questions everybody is thinking about. Everybody has had to deal with it. And so to show that compassion and to want to know how they're doing, it opens a great door to share with.
What do you say? How are you dealing with your fear? What would you share with them?
So I'm thinking of a family who lost their father and I've been spending time with them. Kind of walked through the whole process of him being in the hospital and eventually dying. And when the family came back to town after his burial, I said, hey, can I come over? Is it okay if I come over and sit with y'all? And they said, yeah, sure. Because I had already built a relationship with them, but I didn't know all of the family members. I only knew a couple of the younger sisters. I actually knew the father. The father had been in my house many times. Didn't know the mother very well. And I didn't know some of the other sisters. Mm-hmm. But when I went over there, I first prayed with them. I told them I was very sorry. I talked about the memories of their dad because he would always send me mangoes on the bus from his village. And then I said, you know, I know that this is hard. And I know in our culture that it's hard to talk about how we're dealing with this. And what I would like to do is spend some time with you guys and help you guys talk through what's just happened in your family. And so when I said that and I did that, they agreed. And so I ended up using the Beyond Disaster relief stuff through Trauma Healing Institute. In that first conversation, I said, before we start, I said, can I share with you why I'm here, why I want to help you guys through this? And so then I shared my testimony. I shared my testimony just like I shared with you. I shared why we are here in South Asia. And I said, I know you are struggling as a family. And I said, what I am talking to you about, I said, I'm not a professional counselor. That's not me. Mm-hmm. But I know that the God of this Bible that we're going to read verses about can give you the peace that you are lacking in your heart right now, can help you deal with the hurt in your heart if you let him. And that is where I'm coming from. I need you to know this as we go through this, that the love I'm showing you is because Christ loves you even more than I do. And they agreed and they were so open. And we went through the curriculum with the family. And even after, they're like, okay, well, what are we doing next? And I said, well, I said, I have stories from the Bible. If you guys are still interested in listening, we can keep going. And they were like, yes, sure, let's do it. And so again, that's not broad seed sowing, right? But it was an opportunity that the Lord put right into my lap. And I said, okay, I'm going to take it, right? And I told them, I said, you know, these are things you guys can share with other people. And it could be something down the line where they come to faith. The mom has now asked me if I'd take her to church with me sometime. She was like, I'd really love to come with you. And so I don't know where this is leading. I'm still in the middle of a lot of it. Mm-hmm. But the Lord's doing something there. He's opened up a great door. That's kind of how I operate. Where I feel the most joy is when I get to sit and spend time with people like this and get to the heart of the matter with them.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's how God has gifted you. I think you have a gift of being able to make people feel comfortable and also being able to go deep quickly. You share openly and honestly about yourself, which I think frees others to do that. And so what I'm walking away from this with is a beautiful combination of genuine care, asking questions, combined with confident sharing about the Lord Jesus Christ. Like, you went to counsel them, but you were confident in where you were coming from. And you told them clearly and confidently about your testimony and the Bible. And so we don't want to listen to their struggles and then act like we don't have answers, right? Yeah. We have answers. We know how to deal with fear. We know where to get peace. So that's what we don't want to do, is go and kind of just focus so much on asking questions that we kind of pretend like we're in the same boat as they are. And something that I love about South Asians and Hindu people is they're very spiritual people. They're not going to be surprised when you talk about prayer or your beliefs about God. That is so normal for them. And so I would want to encourage our listeners in that way. Don't overthink that. I mean, they don't hesitate to tell you when they're praying or fasting.
I think one of the other things, and you know, we've met different people that are in different spectrums of this, but I think sometimes there's a fear of being a part of Hindu people's lives, whether it's attending a religious festival or doing something to understand them better. I think about my personal family. Had I said, okay, here's my faith. This is what I believe. I'm not going to participate in anything anymore because you guys do religious things at them. I mean, I would literally not get to see my family at all, right? Because my mom does puja and arti, or arti, and has prasadi every single day in my home to this day. If I said I can't be around that, I would not be allowed to be around my family. What kind of a witness is that to my family? Any other person that is a believer that would then come into their lives would be like, no, that's the faith that stole our daughter, right? And so I think I carry that over to what we do here. And I have no issues going to festivals or things like that. Now, I do draw a very clear line of I won't participate or I won't do this, but I'm here to learn. Explain to me what you believe. Because even for me, it's a learning experience. People practice in this part of South Asia different from what I grew up doing. And so I am learning, but it gives you relationship capital, as my husband calls it. to be able to then share with them what you believe down the line. I think that's an important thing. Go and experience it. Ask questions. Why do they do these things? Do they really believe it? Or is it kind of mythology? That's what I believed. But nobody really asked me to question it or to think about what was true. And so I would encourage people to do that. Be a learner, but also knowing that that gives you the opening to then share with them as well.
Yes. Good. I'm glad you shared that. I think it's a really big question that a lot of our coworkers have, especially in their first term.
Something that we have come across here, even with national believers, mm-hmm. they refuse to be anywhere, even out of their home on a day where it's a religious holiday. Mm-hmm. And I think, is that showing love to our neighbors? Because you're completely isolating yourself from everything that is not what your faith is.
Yeah.
And for me, it's more important to say, I want to show them love and I want to create an opportunity where I can share. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid of getting sucked in or doing something wrong because I know where my line is.
Yeah.
And I make sure that that's verbalized.
I feel like we could keep digging into so much of this so much. We might have to have you come back. But was there anything that we haven't covered that you wanted to talk about?
I had one other thing that, again, this is something that happened to me personally, and I never really thought about it until we moved here. The issue of identity. When I was spending some time with a young lady, she was from a local tribe here. And when she was really struggling with the decision to come to faith, her question to me, I don't understand how I can be a Christian and how I can be from my tribe. And I didn't understand what she meant. As we started talking about it, the identity of being raised up and born into a family, how do you change that and become a believer? And again, it has to do with that. Okay, if I become a believer, does that mean I have to give up everything in my family and my culture? And so the way I explained it to her, I said, you know, when I look at myself, if I were to describe myself, I am a Gujarati American that is a follower of Christ. I was a Gujarati first because I was raised in a Gujarati home. I was American next because everything outside of my home was America. And then I became a follower of Christ. But I didn't lose my love for pani puri and pav bhaji or dressing up. You know, I mean, I love my family. Yeah. I didn't lose my love for grits and biscuits and gravy and meatloaf because I was raised in the South. All of those things are still who I am. Mm. And I think because of how people identify themselves here through, whether it's through the caste system, whether it's through their faith that they're born into in their family, that's a conversation I think, even if we don't have it, they're thinking about it.
Yeah.
I don't know how to do this because I was not born into a Christian family. So how do I become a Christian? Because I can say I believe, but what do I do with all of this cultural stuff and the things that are my heritage and that I grew up with? And so how do we talk them through that? Because even if we don't mention it, they're thinking it. Teaching them what an identity in Christ actually means versus what maybe they think it means. And then also teaching them their cultural identity.
Thank you, Kirti. I hope and pray that all of our listeners have been spurred on to reach out, to show love, to have conversations, to get to know people, to enjoy those relationships. I hope that people in America will feel just so encouraged to just invite their South Asian friends to church and see, they might just come. I know that hospitality is such a big thing for South Asians, and I feel like that could be a really open door for people in the West to just invite South Asian friends, Hindus over, serve them some tea or coffee and just talk with them, get to know them. And the gospel is the power of God for salvation. And we want to share it with love and with boldness. And even as you all listen, and maybe if you have some Hindu or South Asian friends in your life, I hope that you will just take a minute to pray for them and pray that the Lord will speak to them and the Holy Spirit will prepare their hearts and save them in a powerful way, just like He saved Kirti. Thank you again for sharing your heart and your life And I believe God has been honored through our conversation. So I'm so thankful, Kirti.